that's what I got you for, man, because I don't like any of this technology shit. It's a daunting task.
I have a tremendously bad luck for someone who has to deal with tech all day.
Yeah, which is funny because that's like your main thing. And then on top of whatever you do, which I don't know. I never as a friend ask you how things are going. I just dump more work on you week after week.
Yeah, please. No, my job is bad anyway, so who cares?
Oh, yeah. It will, by the way, dumping work on you in the form of the Heavy Hole Podcast. I'm Big Will, a.k.a. Uncle Buck. With me again, Tom Saul. Tom, come on. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing real good. I'm probably the best I've been all day right now.
You feeling better than last time? Last time you were a little achy from putting up that fence.
Yeah, I was actually putting up the last color. I thought I had finished, and then I had to fix something. I did that today, but that doesn't matter. I feel good, though. That's all that matters.
All right, in the words of James Brown, man. Yeah, it's spring is in the air. The weather up here is finally catching up to the weather where you are. It was a beautiful day. It's spring, that time of year when a fat man like myself leaves the sweatpants behind for a few months, and hopefully, if he's prepared well through the winter, like a squirrel squirreling away acorns, he's got a few pairs of basketball shorts ready to go on that first day. I got my Champs, my Reeboks, my Fila's. The big guys know what I'm talking about, man. I'm waiting for Carhartt to try to break out into the athletics. Because Carhartt, I don't know. I don't follow the fashion industry, the streetwear. I just know from being a big guy myself that the Carhartt is obviously like branched out, or they got bought out by somebody because it's everywhere. Like, normal dudes rock Carhartt now. Have you noticed that, Tom?
Guys who sit behind computers all day, like myself, with Carhartt gear. I think that this might be a hot take, but I think that Lululemon is the Carhartt of athletics. And what they need to do is need some Lululemon basketball shorts.
I could see there being a big crossover potential in the death metal community. I don't know that I would bite.
Maybe that would happen, and then you'd bite in 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because 20 years ago I wanted to rock Carhartt because my dad and his friends all rocked it because they were like union construction guys and stuff. But now it's the new normal. Carhartt is the new normal. I think you got to go the step further and get like Caterpillar or Wolverine or like one of those brands.
I was actually looking at they stopped making them, but Caterpillar was making a flip phone for a while.
That's probably sick.
I was considering getting away from the smartphones, and I was like, if I did it, I'd do the cat.
Where is Justin for this conversation? He's probably got all the answers. He's probably field tested all this stuff, man. Tried and true, approved. Yeah. Justin out there, man, still making the artwork, hopefully. I've been waiting a little bit for last week's.
I think he's farming it out now. You know, he's got one of those Indian Fiverr guys doing the heavy hole art.
Yeah. It's the same guys who make the bootleg suffocation stuff and all that stuff back over in other countries, allegedly. No, but speaking of keeping it home, keeping it local, tonight we're gonna talk to a young up and coming American musician, Ian Youngkin of the bands Autolith, Ritual Fog, and Excavate. I'm gonna tell you what he does in each one and how they're doing. All right, Tom, hold tight. Big Will from the Heavy Hole Podcast, and I'm here with Ian Youngkin of Autolith, Ritual Fog, and Excavate. We're going to get into what he does in each of these bands respectively because it switches up a little. Welcome to the podcast, Ian.
Hey, glad to be here. Thank you, Will.
appreciate your time, man. Yeah, and you're in a few different bands. You do guitars, you do vocals, you do bass. We're gonna hash it all out later. And you have some upcoming releases, some fairly recent releases. But getting all back to the start, man, you know where I'm going. Are you from a particularly musical family, musicians older than yourself, or anyone who kind of guided your journey into hard rock, metal, punk, whatever it was?
All right. Yeah, my family is very musical. So I grew up in Ohio in the Akron area, and you know, my dad played piano. My mom and dad both sang in the choirs, and there's always music happening around, whether it be religious stuff or, you know, my dad was a big Genesis fan, Steely Dan, that kind of stuff. So there was music constantly around me growing up. So I was doomed to fall into something musical.
Huh. Well, you see, it's funny you use the word doom, man, because do with what you get into. Well, let me ask you this then. Is guitar your first instrument?
No. Trumpet was my first instrument. I started with the middle school and then high school marching band. Did that, and somewhere along the way, I picked up guitar, and that's kind of became my main focus after that. I was real into like jazzy kind of stuff back then, but I'm kind of jumping around the timeline a lot.
No, I'm sorry, because I was going to ask you this. You said you grew up in Akron, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And then you moved to Memphis, Tennessee as a kid?
Yeah, so I'm from Ohio. I moved down to Memphis when I was about 12, 13 years old. And that was a huge culture shock, you know, coming from the North or Midwest, whatever you want to call it. And then coming down to Memphis, Tennessee, which is, you know, South, Mid-South, you know, people weren't saying y'all and ma'am and sir. Up in Ohio, it was kind of like rude to say up there, at least when I was growing up. And then it suddenly became this thing where it's like expected. You're like, whoa, oh, I thought I was being rude. Sorry. Ah. So it was definitely a huge culture shock there. And then, you know, I think moving to Memphis was great though for the music part, because there was so many other like more music opportunities, at least that I saw. Like the marching band was extremely competitive, and I learned a lot about music that way, and I made a lot of friends that were into the more, you know, rock, punk, hardcore stuff in high school and middle school that kind of forged my path.
Okay, that's why I wanted to ask you about that, because I'm aware that the marching band culture is a little bit different down south.
Yeah, it was extremely competitive. Like, there were well over 200 other kids in my high school marching band, and we went to competitions, you know, for almost a quarter of the year, you know, every weekend competing against, you know, other regional high schools. It was serious stuff. I pretty much had to block out any other social life for that part of my life during that part of the year.
Now, I'm going to ask you to maybe reflect on that. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but nowadays you're working with at least three different bands that I know of.
Yeah.
We'll get into all that. But, you know, you're playing shows, you're recording stuff. Like, looking back, do you feel like you got a certain sense of discipline in terms of music and work from that experience that maybe other people you've worked with lack because they didn't have that?
You know, I can't speak for other people, but that, you know, reflecting back, that's certainly instilled a type of discipline on me, because, I mean, you had to come prepared, or else you're letting down, you know, 200 plus other people that have been working their tails off, you know, to do this, you know, marching band, you know, routine. So yeah, definitely that's affected me today, because, you know, I, you know, try my best to come prepared, and I almost expect that out of other people too, which, you know, I've learned to, you know, taper that down a little bit.
Okay, well, that's what I'm getting. I wasn't asking you out any bandmates or anything in specific, but
I got a list of them.
Yeah. I'm just thinking to myself, like, you know, with that kind of discipline with music, and you're applying it to metal now, just my own personal struggles through the years, all the different bands I've been through, you know, in the last 20 years, you know, I've had shortcomings that I've had to work on, as have a lot of people I've worked with. And I'm picturing you coming from that background, having to deal with a lot of people, like, come on, man, get it together, you know?
Oh yeah. The biggest thing is, like, let's say like we're traveling or something with a band. Like, I expect to be like extremely punctual. I'm that person that wants to be to the city or venue like hours ahead of time, just like in case anything crazy happens. It really instilled like be prepared, be punctual, make sure you have everything that you can control under control. That's definitely took like helped forge me that way.
A great idea, man.
Yeah.
So the scenic route is fun, but you got logistics is so important,
Oh
man.
yeah. Like I'm the one that's like, I'm mapping out. It's like, all right, so we're gonna take, 4 hours to whatever city. We gotta leave by this time so we can be there by this time. Always, try to message venues or promoters ahead of time, be like, all right, what's the lay of the land? What's expected of me when I get there? That kind of deal.
I've had to kind of sit down and do the math on that stuff for a younger, more ambitious bandmate of mine who I love to death at times. I feel almost like I'm like the grumpy old man. Like, listen, it's that it's, I don't know
You
if
assume the band dad role.
It's like the weekend trip to Cleveland from Long Island, New York isn't necessarily logistically possible, but okay, so here's my other thing. You mentioned that there a lot of your early music experience and your family's music experience was based in the church.
Definitely that's where it kind of started. Both my parents and aunts and uncles, grandparents even, they sang in the choir, and I mean they kind of had me singing a little bit, but then they probably heard my actual singing voice and were like, all right, let's find something else for you.
Well,
That's definitely where an interest in a lot of the music definitely stemmed from.
so did you end up kind of growing up playing in the, I guess what they would consider like a praise worship team, like the church band and that sort
Oh
of?
no, I didn't really get into that world. My brother, who's also a musician, kind of went more down that path, but I kind of steered away into the, I guess the darker, more alternative side. Probably late middle school is when that really started taking a hold.
Clearly, because that's what I'm building at right now is then a common question really, because a lot of people come from more religious families and that's how they get into music. I've not I mean I've interviewed other death metal peers of yours and mine who've had that same story. What
Yeah.
your family's reaction along the way to the heavy metal and to the more extreme stuff that you got into and to you not wanting to maybe perform music for the church?
It was a mixed bag. I mean, I could pretty much, for the most part, listen to whatever I wanted. They definitely let me know how they felt about the music, but they weren't like stopping me from listening to it. You get the I like it, but I can't understand the vocals. It would be great without the vocals. You've heard that a million times, I'm sure. So I got that a bunch and lost track of where I was going.
Well,
But
I was gonna ask about your family's reaction.
oh yeah. But the longer I've been listening to it, that's just kind of like, oh, Ian, he likes that kind of stuff. That's fine. They just don't even worry about it anymore. But yeah, first it was kind of almost a little joke to everyone, like, oh, he'll grow out of it. But here I am,
Did your
learning
brother?
something.
You mentioned you have a brother who's a mu I'm 40 something and it's not going. It's only getting worse. It's only getting worse. You mentioned you have a brother who's a musician. Did he ever share interest in heavy metal or any kind of extreme music like you?
He didn't go quite down the rabbit hole like I did, but he definitely listened to a good amount. More so in the like metalcore, post-hardcore realm was that was more his lane. And he still does a bunch with music. He plays in a band around town, and he's actually a like elementary school music teacher now. So he's made music a profession.
You guys ever
So
jam together?
every once in a blue moon, every once in a blue moon. I've our bands have actually played with each other. Like his band, they're called Wood Sage. They've played with Autolith before, and it's kind of fun because it's kind of like a mixed bill situation and a family affair.
That's cool, man. All right, yeah, I'm sorry for prying so much with that, but that's really interesting to
Oh
me.
no, it's cool.
Yeah, that's cool, man. All right, so what? A few more questions, just a little bit about your background there, man. What age do you really pick up guitar and say, this is what I want to do? I want to write, you know, rock based music and play guitar with it.
I mean, I want to say I got my first, you know, like Squire starter guitar probably around eighth grade. So I had to be, you know, 13 ish. And then it was really when I got into high school and started making other friends that were into that style of music. That's when I really started to get interested in, you know, joining a band and, you know, playing music out, or at least with friends and all that.
And Memphis, I got to admit, I've never been to Memphis, and I don't know if this might be a bone of contention because it's a little bit Nashville I've been to a few times because it's a little bit, it's more accessible sometimes if you're coming from the East and you're doing a tour.
I get that.
Yeah, then Memphis. Tell me a little bit about growing up in Memphis as a metalhead, because what I found out about Nashville was it's not just the stereotypical country and rock. There's a little something for any type of music. It's a music town. What about Memphis as a metalhead?
Yeah, Memphis. I mean, Memphis is extremely diverse city. I mean, you name a music genre, there's a little pocket of it there. Metal will definitely be one of the more smaller genres, I'd say. I mean, rap, hip hop is huge here. I mean, you know, like, you know, the 3-6 Mafia, Project Pat, that whole world, and there's, you know, a whole bunch of other, like, Memphis rap is, you know, a big thing. Yeah. Blues obviously is big here. But, you know, growing up, there was actually a really huge scene when I was in high school that was kind of based around like a skate park that would hold shows called, you know, Skate Park of Memphis. I mean, you'd see every kind of show there, whether it's like, you know, this was the late 2000s, so there'd be Job for a Cowboy coming through one week, then Waking the Cadaver, all sorts of things. The hardcore shows would be coming through all the time. So it was really, you could just kind of roll up there on a Friday or Saturday, and there's bound to be some kind of show with heavy music playing, at least in that time frame.
All right, and what about, because nowadays metal is bigger everywhere, and I mean, you're on Maggot Stomp. You know what I mean? And you know where I'm going with this. You know, I say this every podcast, the younger generation, blah, blah, blah. What about in Memphis, in your part of town, man? Has it just kind of like kept steamrolling since you're younger?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when I was younger, it was very big. And then it kind of tapered down a little bit. Granted, I did go live in Chattanooga for about 4 or 5 years for college. So I do kind of have a little blind spot on what was going on in Memphis then. But, I mean, it's kind of just had a slow, like, increase in interest since, you know, 2015 or so. Like, every year I feel like there's new faces and new kids. And for the most part, people tend to stick around. We don't have a lot of, you know, scene tourists, so to say. We have a lot of people that just, you know, come out pretty consistently, which is pretty cool.
Okay, and you mentioned 2015. That's the first time my Source Metal Archives has you listed as being in a band, and that would be Shards of Humanity.
So there were definitely some bands that I played in high school and stuff, you know, that, you know, we had a, you know, release on MySpace or whatever, but nothing that, you know, played out of town. But yeah, 2015 was when I moved back to Memphis from Chattanooga. I finished up college and moved back to be around family. And I was friends with the guys in Shards, and I went and saw them play a show and noticed they didn't have a full lineup. I was like, hey, you got room for me? And next week I was playing bass for them.
Okay, and are you actually on the albums they've put out and such, or like?
I'm on the Cold Logic record.
Okay, got it. Because there's a little discrepancy with that on the when I was looking it up. But fair enough, man. But is it then also fair to say that like Autolith is credited as starting 2017, right?
Yeah.
So I'm getting at, is that a little bit more like your baby type of thing?
Yeah, you could definitely say that. That was something that started with me and the drummer Ryan O'Neill. We met through a mutual friend that we shared, and we were like, oh man, we have extremely similar interests in music, let's jam. And one thing led to another, and we put out that self-titled EP demo, whatever you want to call it, in 2017.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoil it by like just sitting here and naming bands that I think it might sound like a little bit.
You can go for it. Go for it.
Well, I want to. You said that, you know, you had like extremely similar interests. Like, I want you to talk a little bit about the band because it's metal. Okay, and if it's on Metal Archives, it's definitely metal. But it's
Demos metal.
Yeah, like there's something else going on there that's interesting. Like almost like shoegaze is I think maybe a word I would try to use there.
We do use a little reverb and delay on some guitar tones in there. But with that first release, really, we were trying to channel bands like Cursed and Baptist and Converge, His Hero's Gone, that kind of vibe, and
yeah.
Those three songs is just our interpretation of, you know, that melting pot of bands. We're just kind of just weird, not, you know, down like straight down the road metal or hardcore. It was just kind of what we were feeling in the moment.
Yeah. So, well, now that you dropped those names, I feel a little bit more comfortable. I thought a little bit about Botch at some parts.
I can see that. I mean, we're not, there's definitely way less math involved with what I'm playing.
Yeah.
No, not. But, not I mean, I definitely love some Botch.
Not the math necessarily, but like the kind of desperate dissonance, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I do love a dissonant note.
That, clearly.
A tastefully dissonant note.
Clearly. Yeah. You can get lost in it sometimes, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Clearly. So, you get Autolith going, and you guys are fairly prolific with that band. I guess now would be a good time to mention that your upcoming album, can we say the name of it?
Yeah.
Artificial Heaven, which you were nice enough to let me preview. When is that coming out?
That is coming out May 17th, and we are self-releasing that. By the time this comes out, we'll probably have, you know, a little pre-order going and a single or two out.
Okay, and now with this band, this is, like I said, there's a little something different going on that's hard for me to pin down.
It's it's really its own kind of beast. I have trouble describing what kind of music it is to people. I call it like just heavy stuff. Sometimes I'll call it like just really gloomy, doom and gloom music. I mean, it's got some, you know, Neurosis vibes, Cult of Luna vibes, but then yeah, well, we like Torch and stuff like that as well. So all sorts of our own flavor gets kind of sprinkled in there. So it's really unique, I think. I think it's a real genuine representation of of me and the other guys in the band.
Was your intention always to sing and play guitar?
No, I just kind of fell into it. It's really hard.
Well, that's where I was going with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to like, really, I'm the worst at remembering my own lyrics. I have to review my own lyrics pretty frequently. Like the guitar riffs I can remember really easily for whatever reason, but the words, just I gotta like hammer those in a lot, or else that if you don't use it, you lose it, that kind of deal.
Yeah, I've been there. I know what you're saying. So now, while we're on that topic, another question about the vocals, because we haven't even really gotten into Ritual Fog yet, which another band where you do guitars and vocals.
That's correct.
I want to ask a little bit more about like the origins of that band and that sort of thing. Just while we're on this vocal thing right here.
Yeah.
Like something, you know, like listen, you know, listeners who are familiar with the show and my bands know I'm in a few different bands doing vocals. I try my best to give each band a little bit of a different personality vocally and lyrically. What's your approach to singing and playing guitar for two different bands?
Oh, well, I feel like a lot of it, I try to match my voice and guitar tone to the song I'm trying to write or, you know, show off. So Autolith is a little more, it's not as like tough sounding. It's a little more, you know, desperate sounding. I do a lot more high vocals in the Autolith stuff, or maybe even shoutier vocals, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mentioned Neurosis earlier, kind of. I sound nothing like either guy in Neurosis, but I kind of, that's who I do, you know, who I'm almost kind of trying to emulate. And that's just how it comes out. Ritual Fog, I'm just trying to sound as nasty and gross and, you know, I guess mean sounding. So that's more straight ahead death metal compared to Autolith.
Yeah, I was listening to Ritual Fog to the preview you sent me. We'll talk about it this morning, but this morning I was listening to it on my commute. I didn't realize you did vocals for both bands. I had to look
I
back.
know they sound pretty different.
Yeah, well, also the what I'm getting at, Ritual Fog has a much different personality of like
Oh
you
yeah.
like there's these moments where you kind of like break fourth wall and have this like almost like an 80s metal singer charisma, if that makes sense. Like
Oh yeah.
I'm not mocking it, dude. It's
Oh
great.
no. I
Gives it
love it. I love
energy.
it.
I was all right. So while we're on this thing, Ritual Fog is a band that you began in what, 2021, 2022?
I think it was early 2021. It was formed in sometime around the COVID times, as something with a coworker of mine. And it was, kind of started similar to Autolith. It was just me and a drummer, and that's who I wrote the first that Visions of Blasphemy EP. We wrote and recorded that together, just me and him, Andrew. And then from there, we formed a band around it and decided to play shows.
Yeah, man, it's death metal, but there's something about it where you guys inflict. I almost want to say like there's almost a Merciful Fate kind of quality to it, where it's like nostalgic. Well, there's you have the synthesizer parts. Not that it's
Yeah,
all place, but
there's only a few little tasteful parts. I try not to overdo it on that because I feel like if you overdo it, it could be a little
yeah, I'm not.
cheesy and hard to translate live. So
I don't want to give the listeners the impression that it's like Nocturnus or something, but it's like, yeah,
no.
there's just little touches here and there, and then some of the guitar leads and things like that, where you guys go a little bit extra, as compared to Excavate, which we'll talk about, which is a little bit more
Yeah.
down. But Ritual Fog, you guys really pull it into this like over the top kind of theatric metal territory, even though it's still brutal death metal through and through. And what I was saying,
Yeah.
vocals, you kind of adapt a different personality as the front man. I was picturing like a front man, like a guy, like a David Lee Roth guy, definitely.
No. Just little old me up there yelling.
It's funny. And there is a much more death metal quality to the voice there. You do like you were saying with Autolith, it seems a little bit more, influenced by those screechy hardcore and whatever genre you want to call them type of band. There's Ritual.
Doom, sludge, a little black metal even. I would say I kind of dip into that world a little bit with the vocal stylings. It's all over the place there. And Ritual Fog's I try to just create like our own little world
Yeah,
that that's
yeah.
our little slime drenched, fog everywhere world that we've kind of sculpted.
Maybe escapism is the word I'm looking for with Ritual
Yeah,
Fog.
that's a good word for it.
A little more of that traditional heavy metal escapism going on, man.
Yeah. I'm all about that.
I had a lot of fun with that album. And your
I
upcoming,
appreciate it.
well, yeah, we should say your upcoming album, But Merely Flesh, right?
Yes, but Merely Flesh, it's coming out through Transcending Obscurity Records. Don't have a exact release date that I can share yet, but we do have one single up, at least on YouTube now, Desolate Chasm. So you can just search Ritual Fog and find that thing there to get a little taste.
Yeah, highly recommended. As is Excavate. So what comes first, Excavate or Ritual Fog? Because it seems like they both start up around that time.
Yeah, my involvement was Ritual Fog first, and then Excavate came not too far after. So Ritual Fog and Excavate share a lot of members. So
Yeah,
I
noticed that.
so the drummer Andrew of Ritual Fog was playing music with Spencer, who plays guitar in Ritual Fog as well. They kind of had their own other side death metal project that Spencer and another guy named Tommy they were working on, and they needed a bass player, and I was around the practice spot all the time doing the Ritual Fog thing, so I just kind of picked up the bass and away I went rocking and Excavate.
That's
And then
bad.
it kind of worked the same way with the vocalist of Excavate, because we do have a standalone vocalist, and that his name's Brandon. He was also in a hardcore band. Put a record on War Records called Reserving Dirt Naps. They're pretty big around the Memphis scene.
So is the hardcore, because Excavate definitely to me has a sound that fits right in with Maggot Stomp and with that kind of
Yeah.
core and old school death metal crossing over caveman type of scene. Is what's the scene like that for, in Memphis where you're from? Is there like a big crossover thing going on there?
Now there is. I feel like previously, and to an extent, it still kind of is. I like to think that I kind of dance in all the lanes around town, but I mean, hardcore and death metal, they used to be two very separate crowds, and they've slowly started to meld. So yeah, they're crossing over, like you were saying. And now there's most of the young crop of kids, like the 23s and unders. They come out to everything. It doesn't matter if it's death metal or hardcore. So it's really great to see that.
Do
So
you find?
they're just excited to be involved.
Yeah, that's what I found too. Do you find Autolith is maybe a little bit harder to translate for people live, whereas Ritual Fog and Excavate have more of that natural death metal catchiness?
Autolith, I feel like we can actually play any kind of show. We can fit in on a hardcore bill. I mean, we've played with Hoods before, which was kind of funny. And then, I mean, we can play on a death metal, black metal, because I feel like our sound translates to, I mean, everyone can pick out something that they like in it, I feel. So it's kind of one of our cheat codes, so we can play more or less any gig.
Fair enough, man. Yeah, sometimes it's not about what bands you're playing with. It's about getting up there and doing it and proving yourself.
Yeah, I feel like we always leave a pretty good impression on the Autolith side live. We're one of those bands that have way too many amps, and we like to turn them up and make use of it.
Band I was in one time played a basement show. We went out of state to play a basement show, and like a local band that was like opening, like one of the second or third bands playing, they brought down like two full stacks into the basement, and they like
Yep.
refused to like tone it down a little bit. They were like, no, we're a full stack band in the basement show.
We've definitely been guilty of some shenanigans like that. But I like to think we're pretty quick at getting it on and off stage. We take pride in that too.
Well, looking back in the moment, I thought it was a little silly, but now I have to respect it. You know what I mean? It's a boss
I
move.
feel like if as long as you're like efficient and getting off and on stage, do what you want to do. That's kind of where I'm at.
Dude, well, that's a big deal, man. Getting on and off stage, helping. Well, you don't, because you're a guitarist slash vocalist, so you're like economizing for the band just doing that. Like me as the vocalist. If I'm not breaking down drums or working merch, I'm definitely looking bad. You know what I mean? You got to do
Pressure's on.
when the music, I can't get caught drinking a beer or doing anything. You got to be working.
Now you can't catch your breath. You gotta be on
Well, you must know me. I literally can't catch my breath, man. But not since they legalized weed in New York, allegedly. But what's
Legend.
allegedly, but. While we're talking about gear, and I'm trying to shift the subject away from weed, I never ask anyone to divulge any secrets or whatever like that, but it does. I am a little curious, as like I said, this whole thing with you playing guitar in two different bands, how you approach the different sounds for the bands, and maybe if you want to get into what sort of guitars, gears, amps, anything that you're using on the upcoming albums and that you rely on.
Sure. So I try to make it to where I'm using as much of the same gear as I can between both bands. It kind of just makes, practicing and gigging easier. But R Ritual Fog I keep pretty simple. That's a distortion, a delay pedal, a chorus, and a 6505 PV through Emperor cab. And then it's pretty much all there is to that one. The Autolith is a little more nuanced, so we've gone through a lot of different iterations with how we play live with Autolith. So we started as a three-piece, drums, bass, guitar, and then we added a second guitar, and then we dropped a bass player to where it was just two guitar players, and I would do this kind of split rig situation where I'd split my signal to a bass amp and a guitar. So I was kind of doing this the bass and the guitar at the same time and vocals. So so with that, I was basically running three amps at the same time. So my usual setup when I was doing the three amp was a Sovtek MIG 100 and a PV Musician. So I had a tube amp and a solid state amp. And then I had like a PA head I would do the bass side on. So it would actually like push some subs out too a little bit. It was extremely loud. And
Yeah,
then
that.
I.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's not to interrupt. Keep going. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then after a while, we're like, okay, if we feel kind of limited doing the bass and the guitar by the same person. So we've only recently just added another bass player. So I'm just doing guitar and vocals again now, which I basically just cut the bass side of that rig out, and I'm just running those two amps now. So
Okay, that's I've always been fascinated by bands who do something like that. Have you ever seen Goat Whore live?
yeah, Autolith, we actually played with Goat Whore, and
So you've
that
seen Sammy.
Sammy's tone live is insanely good. Like, they are a tight sounding band.
Yeah, he doesn't do bass, but he runs it's been several years, but when one of my bands was touring with them, he runs his guitar through like two different amps to get kind of a dual guitar sound, type of thing.
Yeah, you kind of get a stereo situation, especially if he's the only guitar player playing. It helps to have that kind of stereo. You get that two different tones going. It sounds more full.
I'm the worst person to explain the sound engineer side of it. I do know that
I probably only know just a little bit more. Not that
Sammy
much.
Goat Whore definitely had an effective rig for that, man. I'd love it.
I was entranced watching him play. He sounded so good, and I'm preaching to the choir here. Everyone knows Goat Whore is sick.
Yeah, great band, man. Gotta get those guys on one day. But all right, so we talked a little bit about how Ritual Fog and Autolith have upcoming albums. What's going on with Excavate?
Excavate is hibernating. We're writing riffs, practicing here and there, and just kind of plotting and scheming the next moves. So there'll be more stuff coming down the line. I just can't divulge too much yet.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with one or two of my projects, man. I hear you. And when you guys are all in different bands, that's how it
Yeah.
something has to take the back seat a little bit sometimes, because everyone's in like four or five bands. And
Oh, in Memphis, yeah. Like, I feel like Memphis musicians get, tossed around just like any other city. We're all in three plus bands at a time.
is it for that reason? I mean, is it like somewhat? Is it easy to, I don't want to say easy, like it's easy street and like everything's peachy, but like, is it more conducive to like living as a musician in Memphis for that reason, or is it actually harder because there's so many musicians?
I feel like it depends. Living in Memphis, I mean, compared to a lot of other parts of the countries, not too bad. I the cost of living's not nearly as severe here compared to, let's say New York, where you're at, and other places. But so I guess that does afford us a little bit. I mean, it's pretty easy to, rent a storage unit and share it among five, six dudes, and it's not breaking the bank to have a solid practice spot. So in that way, it's not too expensive to be in a bunch of bands.
All right, man. And with I know I got to shout out quickly that Ritual Fog, I know you guys are doing this Austin Death Fest.
Yeah, we're really excited about that.
It's coming up quick. I'm hoping that we get this episode out in time. I believe we will, because that's the 27th and 28th of April. So that's coming up real hot.
Yeah, we're playing the 27th. We're playing bright and early. I think we're one of the I think the second band playing. But yeah, we're in good company. There's Witch Vomit, Outer Heaven, Mortiferum, however you say it. There's a bunch of great bands on that bill. So we're really excited. Jason asked us to play that.
Yeah,
Shout out, Jason.
shout out to Jason, good dude. I really wish I could take the time to travel down there. Just with work, it's not going to work out for me right now, man. But I've really seen, that is definitely one of the best and most well curated lineups for a death fest I've seen lately. That I mean, just and we're just talking about in my personal tastes. I'm not knocking anyone else.
Yeah.
But I mean, that is a really sick death metal fest. There's a few others going around there that really make me just want to, win the lottery already.
Yeah, I think this Austin Death Fest has a good mix of, up and coming regional bands, like in the southern adjacent realm, and then, you know, some bigger bands, bigger up and coming bands. A lot of, I mean, there's a lot of 20 Buck Spin representation on there. Maggot's Top representation on there. I think it's a, I mean, yeah, like you said, a very well curated fest.
100%, man. So, what else do you have cooking for live with any of your bands? Anything else you want to talk about in the next month or two?
Okay. Well, leading up to, I mean, a lot of people will hear this after the fact, but Ritual Fog does have a week of shows leading up to the Austin Death Fest, kind of starting in Missouri and zigzagging our way down to Austin. Beyond that, we expect to do a little bit more traveling in the latter part of the year whenever the album comes out, Ritual Fog. And then Autolith for shows, we'll probably do some more regional touring around the South, and if opportunities present themselves, we'll kind of branch out beyond that.
Okay, and just to clarify, are you still with Shards of Humanity or?
Shards is kind of taking a step back for now. I'm not going to say it's, you know, dead or anything like that, but we're not active right now. Everyone's kind of doing their own thing. No bad blood, but we're just all kind of doing our own other projects for right now.
Got it. All right, no, I just wanted to, you know,
Yeah,
that
yeah.
popped up when I was taking my notes, man. All right, fair enough, man. So just to remind the listeners, Ritual Fog's new album, But Merely Flesh, will be out on Transcending Obscurity shortly. Follow them on social media so you know exactly when. And Autolith is coming out with Artificial Heaven. That's a self-released album, so definitely keep your eyes out for that. Follow those bands on social media for more info on that. And also Excavate. It's worth a spin to go back to the Imperial Horror 2022 Maggot Stomp release. Like I said before, in my opinion, it's a little bit more straightforward, stripped down death metal, old school death metal hardcore crossover. Definitely what Maggot Stomp has kind of made their brand on.
Yep. We definitely fit the mold a little bit there.
Yeah, no, man, not bad stuff, man. And I'm definitely you know, looking to see what happens in the future with that. I'm gonna give you the opportunity to plug and promote anything else you got going on that I may have neglected to mention. But you know where I'm going, Ian. I'm gonna ask you now to recommend one older and one newer piece of music by any artist you like, metal or otherwise. Just, you know, no strict rules about it. Just something old and something new.
All right, I'm a cheat and do a Memphis band old and new, and then a non-Memphis band old and new.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
for the old, starting with Memphis, I got to go. His Hero Is Gone, that Monuments to Thieves record. I mean, it's I guess a crust punk record at its core, but I mean, there's elements of black metal, sludge, hardcore in there. It's required listening. You guys probably all have heard it before.
Really, one of a kind band. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and if you're from Memphis, you can't help but take a little bit of that influence. It just kind of finds its way to you. The other old record is kind of an oddball. I only recently found out about Garden of Shadows, their record Oracle Moon. It's a Earache release from I think 2000. It reminds me of the band Worm, the current band Worm, like a lot of melodic leads and like kind of doomy. If At the Gates went doom with their riffs, it kind of sound like that, but with some melodic leads. Highly recommend it.
I'm just looking that up now, man. That you kind of like threw that one out. That was left field for me. I remember that.
Yeah, I only recently found this one. I've never heard of them until like this year.
Yeah, Garden of Shadows. It says that that was kind of the last thing they released. Split up, and I'm just looking at who was. That's right, Sean. Sean Beasley of Dying Fetus fame was in that band.
Oh wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because
All right.
I remember there were some weird connections with that band. That's right. Sean Beasley of Dying Fetus fame was in Garden of Shadows.
Much different vibe than a dying fetus.
Yeah, I'll say, man. And maybe one, I gotta talk to Rick, who's sometimes the co-host.
Yeah.
Now I'll get my friend Rick to co-host this episode. We'll cut the intro and outro and talk about Garden of Shadows a little bit more, because he was like always into that genre back in the days.
Yeah.
Sure, he knows that band.
But, to me, it was like the perfect marriage of that kind of death doom, but it's got a really original sound, at least to this album. I haven't listened to anything else by him, but I just stumbled upon it and it really, really, really hit good.
Yeah, dude. Great recommendation. Okay.
Thank
So
you.
I'll let you keep going.
Yeah. So for the new, the Memphis one, a band called Cora, that's Chora. They have a record they put out last year called There Lies a Friend I Once Knew. Definitely in the kind of Neurosis, Cult of Luna realm. And I actually did a little guest vocal spot on it. So some shameless self-promotion indirectly there. Can't recommend that record for theirs enough. They actually just put out a vinyl release of it. It's, you know, if you like Neurosis, if you like Cult of Luna, you'll like that record. Then for the other new release, Sunrise Patriot Motion, their record, Black Fell Flower Stream, is a full length they put out, maybe I think in 2022. It features members of Yellow Eyes and Bambara. It's kind of got this, if Killing Joke came out with like some black metal vibes, particularly in the vocals, it's super weird stuff. Kind of post-punky, howling vocals. It's very one of a kind release, and if you like Killing Joke, I definitely recommend you checking it out. And they actually just put out a new EP just last week of just four songs. I can't remember the name of it, but along the same lines.
Okay, I'm sorry. What was the band name again?
Sunrise Patriot Motion.
Sunrise Patriot Motion. That's interesting. And you said it was like kind of like Killing Joke.
Yeah, at least that's what it makes me think of, like Killing Joke. It's got some heavy post-punk vibes to it, and kind of dark wave vibes. But then it's got some random distorted guitars and kind of howling vocals. It's a really unique listen.
And you said members of Yellow Tears?
Yellow Eyes.
Yellow Eyes. I'm thinking of an old New York band. I'm sorry. Yeah, I know Yellow.
No worries.
I always get it confused. Okay, so... and you did your Memphis. We were playing by Memphis rules just now. You did a Memphis.
Yeah. I had to throw a curveball at you.
Okay, man. Did I neglect anything? To neglect to mention anything that you wanted to promote? I think we covered just about all your bands.
I think we covered everything. Yeah, the new Autolith record, Artificial Heaven, is coming out May 17th. We have tapes, vinyl, CDs available for pre-order. Ritual Fog, we have. New record, But Merely Flesh, coming out through Transcending Obscurity Records sometime later this year. So keep an eye out for that.
All right, man. And we wish you the best of luck going forward. Definitely the best of luck with that Austin Death Fest. Say hello to everybody down there for me, man. I wish I could make it myself. And we'll keep our eyes out and our ears out for all that stuff, dude. Thank you so much for your time. Any parting words for listeners of your music and listeners of the podcast?
Thanks for listening, and if you're out there creating music, be genuine. Thank you.
I like that. Be genuine, man. Thank you so much, Ian. Appreciate it, brother. I just worry about you sometimes, man. Last time you had funny people knocking on your door. You know, I don't know what's going on out there, man. I can see why you would want to build this fence after the last episode.
Yeah. I got to keep people out the best I can over here. You want to hear something funny, man? I was out to dinner last night with Gab, and we were sitting getting some sushi. The waiter takes our order, and I hear this guy stop the waiter right after he takes our order, and he's just like, at least, how do you spell that? Our waiter, he spoke Spanish. English was definitely his second language. And the guy was trying to figure out how to spell at least, because he thought it was one word. And he couldn't even convey that in terms other than, when I type it in, it's blue on my phone.
Huh.
And yeah, that kind of made my day, to be honest. I had to intervene. I told him, it's two words, sir.
I'm glad you helped. Yeah, that, when you talked about the blue on the phone, it's like the whole story became abstract to me. I thought, like, for a minute, I thought you were like I thought this was like poetry or something. Like,
no, I don't know. It was just one of those moments where, you know, when someone does something so stupid, you get happy.
I've done that, man. I've made many people happy, I guess, over the years, than by being the stupid person. I've done many stupid things over the years, man.
Oh yeah, downtown Savannah is primed for it because it's one of those open container areas, so people just walk around drinking.
And, wow, I thought they only did that in Vegas.
Now they do a little bit of that in Vegas, I think, between some of the hotels, and then it's Louisiana down in New Orleans. They'll do that, and then it's Savannah, I guess. The historic district, you can get it hammered.
It seems like that's the rule in my neighborhood. I don't know if it's on the books, though. They kind of, like, lately, dude, I was driving past this guy the other day. I was like, I guess he doesn't need the paper bag anymore. He's just free, right down Pulaski Road.
I mean, what are they going to do with him? You know, they got to write him a ticket?
Yeah, give him a refill. Whoa. Yeah. Listen, speaking of refills, Tom, you gave me, we're going to refill the, how should this metaphor go, man? Well, you're the poet. You tell me. We got recommendations, and we're going to refill the listeners on them, Tom, right?
That's good. Yeah, if you need a refill at home, some recos, then we have you.
I would like, what I've been doing, Tom, I know lately you're a little out of touch with the culture.
I am.
I dare to say. I give the co-host the gentleman's first turn. All right, oh. So you, yeah, it's the balls in your court, as my seventh grade guidance counselor said many moons ago.
Because I can't pull up Metallum fast enough.
Oh, okay. You should ask. They call me Quick Draw when it comes to Metal Archives. I got Metal Archives on my phone. I got a that's my homepage.
Yeah, that's in your IG handle, Quick Draw Metallum. Yeah.
There's many times throughout the day where I just bust up Metal Archives, just, you know.
That's awesome. Hell yeah. All right, I got it open. So I'm bringing in an album, came out last year by the band Whores Nation, an album called Dearth. Whores Nation is one word, unlike at least. It, I was cruising through a YouTube hole, and I found one of those obscene extreme, like, compilations. I don't know what it is. I think I was having a drink. I just want to see some fast-paced TikTok-style grindcore. And you're watching through this compilation of, you know, 80 or 90 bands that are going to be playing this year's Obscene Extreme. And, you know, honestly, most of them I'm not really interested in at all. They all kind of sound similar. Of course, there's a lot of gold there to be found. But let's be honest, there is a lot of things that I don't need to hear. So as this compilation is going and all these similar sounding bands after piling through this compilation, this band, Whores Nation, pops up and I see the drummer and I'm going, wow, this guy knows how to fucking play. So what drew me to this album and, well, this band in general was the drumming. It is so good. I love grind with sick drums, and this is totally class stuff. This guy Tonio on drums, they're from France, by the way, Whores Nation, so they're all French fellas. Tonio doesn't play in any other bands. Amazing drummer, supernatural fast. You could tell he's really learned on the drums. So I heard this album they did, this Dearth album. Highly recommend it. Solid grind. Will not disappoint.
Yeah, I'm glad that you threw this my way today. It was a little unexpected. I don't know that we've been doing a lot of, like, grindcore, quote-unquote, on the show lately. It's been a little bit more death metal, maybe the touch of black metal here. But depending on who I got on the show, I haven't really been, aside from, like, my, you know, like, my Dead Infection and Squash Bowels, Excruciating Terror, like, my personal favorites. I haven't been listening to a lot of grindcore lately, like exploring new bands or anything like that. And this was really cool, man. This was, there's a few thoughts I had about this. First of all, this might be a good segue for fans of brutal death metal or even ping death metal to get into something a little bit more traditional grindcore styled, because it has those brutal vocals and it's there are death metal elements here, but they keep a very, and like there's death metal parts kind of, but they keep a very solid focus on that more old school punk hardcore style of grindcore writing, you know, those riffs, those kind of like quick simple riffs, you know, that keep the momentum pushing forward, kind of come back over and over. Yes, the drums are great. The snare drum, the way it just it sounds like popping crisp celery. It sits right in the mix perfectly, and this guy does a lot of fun rolls, snare rolls, in and out of parts. It, for that reason, I wouldn't say he goes as clinical and as polished with all of the roles and as jazzy as the band Commit Suicide as their drummer, but that band did come to my mind when listening to this, I think, for some of those reasons you said about how the drummer really, really brings it home and really shines through that wall of noise, especially with that snare drum tone. There's not much I really want to add to this. It was a quick album. It didn't even last me my whole commute home, which again, in grindcore, that's what you want. It was like very refreshing for me, and it got me a little bit more wanting to explore modern grindcore, what's going on in the scene now, because I always have my head in death metal and certain other things, and grindcore, I'm a little bit more of a nostalgic type of person. So this was really cool, man. And what else did I want to say about this? I guess I'll just wrap it up there. But yeah, the thing about like this, this has the vocals are so solid. That's the thing. You call this grindcore. It's almost like nowadays, there's this kind of like, do you call this death grind, brutal death grind? I don't know, because the vocals are so death metal and sick in a lot of ways, man. But great, great release overall, Tom. Thanks for bringing it my way.
Of course. All right, everyone, check out Horse Nation's album Dearth on Carbonized Records.
Good decision last week. If you remember when we recorded last week, I was about to head out the door and go see a show. It's at Shaker's Pub there. I saw Tar, Roots of Deception, Groaning Wretch, missed Burrito Bow, sadly. I will catch them another time. Necrofeasting the Exhumed is the EP by Roots of Deception, which I purchased on cassette. It's their most recent release, 4 songs. And I just wanted to toss it the listeners' way real quick, because it's really, it stands out. It stands up and above, I think, some other bands trying to do the same thing nowadays, young up-and-comers, and mainly... Each member definitely is tight. Like the vocalist is solid, good frontman live. Vocals are really on point and tight, and which they have to be, because the music, the guitarist, bass player, and drummer have a really interesting... this is not like tech death. It's not like clinical, shreddy, technical death metal. But there's technical elements, but it's also brutal. And it's brutal enough for people to get dumb live. It's brutal enough where it kind of has those parts that maybe bring to mind classic East Coast bands, I'll just say, without getting, you know, too specific. It kind of, you know, you can tell that this band is kind of learned of the past, so to speak, but they're spinning it in their own little way, and they're I guess you could say technical. I would just say technically adept.
I would kind of give it the technical in terms of like how Suffocation is technical.
You know what? I was trying to avoid the suffocation word, but you brought it home because that was on my mind. That came to my mind when I was listening to it earlier today. Let's go for it. Yes, and you're right, because suffocation I don't think of as tech death. They're just like a brutal death metal band that has sick chops, right? And, yeah. You know, and does that make sense?
And if you that kind of sound is lends itself to good songwriting because it's not about showing off how tech you are. It's about making a sick riff that might happen to be technical, but it's not there to show off how sick a guitar you are. It's there to sit as a good riff. And there's a lot of that in this EP.
I think it's changed over time because nowadays tech death over the last like 10, 15 years, maybe more. It's like since Necrophagist, it became this arms race to see how annoying you could make your songwriting as a musician. You know what I right. mean? Like, not at all. Look, all due respect, a lot of these people are friends of the program, but there's become this niche of like Guitar Center, Sam Ash type of jazz school type of thing going. There's a thing going on where it's adjacent. It's gent adjacent. Okay, does that make sense? Like, there's a, yeah. It's like a show-offy type of clinical exercise more than it is, like, whereas Suffocation is just writing a sick death metal song, and it's not something that's easy for someone to just pick up, who just started playing guitar. I think, without belaboring the point too much more, Tom, sorry to cut you off, you're right, these guys are just doing a classic East Coast technical brutal death metal type of vibe, and I think they bring a little bit of the modern generation to it when they get super dumb on some of the breakdowns. Not that they have breakdowns like it's a deathcore band, but on some of the real brutal death metal chugs, they dumb it down a little extra, and I think that speaks to the modern generation more. But I'll leave it there. I don't want to give you the wrong impression. Any other thoughts, Tom?
Kind of tacking on and echoing your sentiment, it's it is learned of old school East Coast stuff, and it's brutal. It's very cool.
Absolutely, man. Check these guys out. I'm going to try to get them on the program soon. Right, man. So listen, thank you very much to Ian Youngkin, first of all, for his time. We hope you check out all of his projects that we spoke about, and look out for all the upcoming stuff. Tom, thank you for bringing Whores Nation to my attention. And you kind of just, I don't want to get too sappy here, but that's how this thing goes with metal. It's like we got to come out of our shells and talk to people a little bit more, and that gets you excited about music. There's stuff that I would never check out if I didn't have a conversation with you or with other people, man. Rick got me on a Def Leppard kick the other day too, speaking on the same token. So there's that.
Yeah, I mean, bro, Def Leppard kick occasionally, very good. I kind of fell into a Meth Leppard kick the other day.
Good band. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was Buckshot played with them. It's been a while, but I know one of my bands played with them several years ago, man.
Yeah, Aussie two-piece, good stuff.
Yeah. Def Leppard, Hysteria, High and Dry, going old school, Work Appropriate. It's funny how times, just like tech death kind of changes with the generations, Def Leppard is now appropriate to play at my job. That's just kind of like classic rock, you know what I mean? It's good. So that's kind of going on. Anything else, Tom? You plugging anything?
Unless you want to start another podcast, no.
Are you kidding me, man? I'm doing this one by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah, no, then I'm good.
Yeah, man, especially with the nice weather out there. Man. No, I'm just kidding, man. We got some good interviews coming, man. I recorded some good shit lately, and I can't wait to get it out for everybody. Coming up, we got May the 16th going over there at the old Shaker's Pub. May the 16th, $15, doors at 7, music at 8. It's Failure. Fastcore from Italy, their first USA show ever. I love the fact that their first USA show of their tour ever is going to be at Shaker's Pub on Long Island.
Yeah.
It's an extremely American place.
Very American, yeah. They might be a little disappointed, though. I'm just going to throw it out there. I remember I was at Surreption's first New York show, and that was at Revolution. It was pretty low turnout.
See, that's almost, I feel like that's more Long Island than America, but Shakers is more American than Long Island.
I know what you mean. Yeah, it definitely has.
Am I wrong here, guys?
No,
weigh in.
And I'm not speaking to throw shade at any venue. When you think you're going to play New York and you're from somewhere else, and then you go to one of these places, maybe not what you expected.
Listen, I am looking forward to this because Anal Birth will be performing. The shadowy figure known as Brainless Bill, always out there supporting Adam Rotella live with Anal Birth nowadays. Dragato, a Long Island band, will be playing, as will be Bandit from, I believe, Bandits from Philadelphia. We've discussed them on the podcast
good
a few
band.
Times.
Very good grind band.
Yes, sir. And Raid, Long Island's own young up-and-coming Raid. A while ago, we had them on a while ago because I knew. I saw them kids in Raid. I said, they're going to be doing things. Let me talk to them now so I could relentlessly, desperately claim some connection to them for my own relevance in the scene as I get older, like a vampire, like a weird vampire. Yes, it's going to be all going down May the 16th. Failure, Fastcore from Italy's first USA show, Anal Birth, Dragato, Bandit, and Raid at Shaker's Pub over there. Come through, man. Baby Chico Records and Syrup Head are throwing it, man. Real sick guys. Love them guys. Besides that, I don't really have any other shows going on that I'm performing at. We're trying to do things behind the scenes, man. It's always going to be... Hey, I just want to say congrats to all my bandmates, man. Have a beautiful life. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to get myself into trouble, man. It's always going to be your bandmates that hold you back more than anybody else out there. They know it. Look, I love you. Tom, besides that, I think we wrapped it up. Shout out to Justin out there. Shout out to the rest of the co-hosts. We got a very special episode coming up where I'm getting a few of the co-hosts together, like a team-up, like an old-school team-up, and we're going to, once the Zoom call starts, one of them doesn't know, but we're going to gang up on them and kind of roast them throughout. No, we're going to talk about a specific death metal band's discography, and everyone's going to be polite to each other, most likely.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest drawbacks of the show is the politeness. Too damn nice.
You and Justin really lost morale over time because I wouldn't let you guys have any fun back when we all recorded together, man. I mean, am I wrong, dude? There was a lot of... I was a little extra with it when we first started the show.
Yeah, but that's all right. We're still, you just do it, though. You just figure it out. The show is what it is now, and it's cool, and people listen. Justin used to get pretty salty back in the day.
I know.
It was fun. I liked it. I thought it was great.
I was a little sensitive because I didn't want anybody saying anything or me, anything getting thrown out of context because, I didn't want to get kicked out of any bands I was in. I guess I learned my lesson there. But good. But anyway, man, we've had a nice, polite podcast series. Shout out to Justin. Hopefully he returns my texts. Oh, boy. Thank you to Ian Youngkin, also, man. And thank you to all our other guests waiting patiently, man. We got a lot of great interviews coming out soon, man. Stay tuned. It's the Heavy Hole Podcast. I got to pack away all my sweatpants in the attic and go to Walmart and get a few end ones. Oh,